This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Drought in California is making national news, but here in South Texas, we've seen this before, and we've seen that it takes a major turn of events to turn competing interest into common stakeholders to find working solutions when it comes to water. That's what happened with the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program. And meanwhile, looking back at the California drought, will this be the event that finally wakes America up over climate change? Can we finally start arguing, finally stop arguing over politics and start finding solutions? We're going to be talking about the drought and climate change, and we want you to join the conversation. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. Our guests are two authors who will be at the San Antonio Book Festival on Saturday. That event is free and it's at the Downtown Central Library. We're going to have more information on our website, tpr.org. And so we're joined by Robert L. Gulley. He's the author of Heads Above Water, the Inside Story of the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program. And Seamus McGraw, he's the author of Betting the Farm on Drought, on a Drought, Stories from the Front Lines of Climate Change. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Glad to be here.
So, Seamus, let me ask you about this California drought thing. Do you think that the California drought now, as we're seeing it, and that this is a crisis of supply on the West Coast, and this is going to be a major watershed, pardon the phrase, event in talking about climate change?
I think it has the possibility to be that, David. But we have a notoriously short attention span. One of the things that I think is out of a terrible situation, one of the possible blessings out of all this, is the idea that, you know, when it was just Texas and Arizona, it didn't focus the attention of the public quite as much. I honestly believe I've seen more stories about the California drought in the last 10 days in the national media than I saw about the drought in Texas during the entirety of it. So I think there's a benefit to that. I also think there's something else that comes of it, and that's that it becomes really clear when you are talking about the drought in California. Yeah, when you turn around and look at numbers like 1.1 trillion gallons of water going to the growth of almonds, that's the kind of number that resonates with people. And it's the kind of number that makes people sit up and think about their own consumption. Whether they continue to do that, you know, as we go through this thing, that remains an open question. But I think it's at least gotten the conversation on the table, and I think in a way that, and literally on the table, right there in the salad bowl, because most of your salad is coming from California. I think it's gotten it on the table, and I think if nothing else comes of this, that's a good thing.
But Seamus, as you mentioned, you know, the Texas drought, Arizona drought, not a whole lot of national attention. The same thing goes for the wildfires in Colorado. That was also devastating to the area, very limited in scope, and to the drought in the Midwest, which was crippling to the corn production for the nation.
Absolutely.
But now this could be the clarion event that finally wakes people up.
I would hope so. I would hope so. I really do hope so. You know, and here's something else that here's my big fear that goes along with it. We've been here before. You know, we had a drought 40 years ago in California that also riveted the attention of people because it's California. You know, there were far fewer people there then, but it was, you know, it riveted public attention. I'm not sure that we sustain that level of attention when the immediate crisis passes. You know, look, we can have a debate. We can have a debate that about much of a factor climate plays in this drought. It plays some factor. It plays some role. It certainly be exacerbating it. Part of it is also cyclical. And when you turn around and have these kinds of events, people do sit up and notice as long as it's happening in a place that is already on their radar. But as soon as it passes, or even loosens its grip a little bit, I think the focus tends to fall away. You know, climate was all anybody talked about here in the months after Sandy hit the East Coast.
Right.
You don't hear it quite so much.
So let me get Robert Gulley into the conversation. Head Above Water, your book.
Yeah, let me make a couple of observations. One, I'd like to go back to the fact that you use the notion of the Texas drought in the past tense. And I think that's a mistake.
Good point.
I think that's a mistake. I think it remains to be seen. And we may find pictures that are equivalent to what you see on California if the current drought continues. I think the other thing that has to be focused on in California is the fact that they have really done they're very late in the game in terms of water regulation, particularly with respect to groundwater. And to the extent that that has played a role in this, I think is something we're going to have to look back on and try to analyze. And it may well be that some of the initial measures that they've put in place in their groundwater regulation are not going to be adequate, and that what's going on right now will reveal that.
And what are those regulations that you're talking about?
I think in general, their groundwater has gone unregulated in the state of California. And I think that we're beginning to see efforts to regulate it, but whether those efforts go far enough, I think is an open question at this point.
And Governor Jerry Brown has... Okay, go ahead, Seamus.
I just wanted to jump in. I could not possibly agree with Robert Moore on both of those points. And if it sounded as if I was saying, you guys are out of the woods, you are not. And I didn't mean to suggest that by any stretch of the imagination. And Robert also raises a really good point that even when you turn around and look at some of these issues that Governor Brown is tackling, you know, we're not looking at some of these things going into effect for decades. He makes really solid points on both of those.
I recently visited with a federal official who said that he was involved in a discussion in California in which he said, "My God, man, they regulate, they even regulate groundwater in Texas. Where are you?"
All right. Well, if you can call rule of capture regulation, I don't know. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. The number to call in if you want to join our conversation, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about betting the farm on a drought, stories from the front lines of climate change. Author Seamus McGraw is with us. And Heads Above Water, the inside story of the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program. And you, come on, call in 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about California's drought. What does it mean for here in Texas or the nation? Is it going to be a game changer for the nation as we think about the future of water and climate change and stop arguing about politics and trying to find common solutions? With me are the authors Robert L. Gulley and Seamus McGraw. They've written two different books, taking two different approaches, talking about water, but it still seems like they are definitely on the same page when it comes to realizing that we've got to wake up about the future of water. Let's get some callers in on the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join us, like Pat. Hi, Pat. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Pat, hurry.
Okay. All right, Pat. We're going to put you on hold for a second. We'll move on and see if Rick is available. Rick, hi. You're on The Source.
How you doing, gentlemen? My question is pretty basic, but I think it could help us understand this crisis a little bit better. What exactly defines a drought? Because I live in Texas, I know we're experiencing a drought, but it still rains. And I think there's some confusion about what does it take to be considered to be in a drought? And also, well, how much rain has to occur to get a state out of a drought?
Okay.
I guess I need some clarification on that.
All right, Rick, great questions. Appreciate that. So, Robert Gulley.
There are a lot of definitions for what constitutes a drought. many of them quite technical. But I think one of the things that you have to look at is when you go through an extended period without a lot of rainfall or what we call recharge, then when you have an aquifer, that aquifer is losing water. It's being mined. The water that's in the aquifer is not being replaced. As that occurs over an extended period of time, it can affect the aquifer. It can affect the long-term productivity of the aquifer. But I think the most important thing is that it takes time, and that the amount of time that it takes to restore the aquifer to its normal levels can be quite extensive. And the longer you stay in a drought, the longer it takes to get out of a drought.
It's not just the aquifer, it's other reservoirs as well.
Certainly other reservoirs as well, but yes.
Okay. And let's get another caller, Liz. Hi, Liz. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. I'm a Southern California resident and I went back in January, and I've lived through all the droughts and everything there. What happens is that you drive through. I drove through from San Diego all the way up to almost San Francisco. The lawns, especially in the wealthy neighborhoods of Los Angeles and even up to San Luis Obispo, are these vast, gorgeous, manicured within an inch of their life spaces. And we're being asked as a nation to suffer with food production and agriculture there, which gives so many jobs to the region, is also asking to suffer for these people's vanity. I don't understand why it's not being addressed that these people need to stop having these big green lawns. And I'm driving through Monta Vista, and it's the same thing here. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Okay, Liz, thanks for the call. Seamus, is it going to be the end of lawns?
You know, I think what's happening here is that we're looking for culprits, and they're easy to find sometimes. The reality is there are some people who indulge in ostentatious excess. And I think the way you address that, you don't address that in a discussion about climate. You don't address that even in a discussion about drought. You discuss that, A, by turning around and you know, basically putting a price on their lawns, okay, but also by kind of returning to something that I think we've lost really across the board in the country, which is a discussion about character. You know, there was a time when you might have had a few of those, but you didn't have as many of them because that kind of ostentatious display in the face of other people's hardship was culturally unacceptable.
Okay.
I think the only thing I'd add to that, I mean, and I certainly agree with a lot of what you've said, but I think that you have to use the word conservation if you're going to deal with issues like that. And the city of San Antonio, through the San Antonio Water System, has one of the finest conservation programs in the country. And it's a program that's not static. It continues to grow. It continues to adapt. It's now looking at landscape conservation, a landscape watering conservation, as an important element of it. So, I mean, it doesn't solve the problem, but it does begin to solve the problem, and it creates the right attitude that allows the kind of changes that Seamus is talking about.
So, Robert Gulley,
those go beyond. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is that those go beyond, the word conservation, it's a really powerful word. It carries with it a real question of character, and I think I don't want that point to get lost. I agree with Robert completely, but I don't want that point to get lost, that, you know, that we as a culture have to turn around and kind of define what is acceptable behavior. And I think this is the tail end, I think, of a generation, a couple of generations, that defined ourselves through consumption. Okay. And maybe this is an opportunity to do otherwise.
And I think in through the conservation programs, you help the citizenry at large define the character that they expect as a community. So I think it's valuable in that respect.
So, Robert, in your book, Heads Above Water, you tell the inside story of the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program. So tell us, what is the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program?
through a long history of water disputes, it really focused in 1993 on a court ruling that said that the impact of it was that the aquifer had to be managed in a way that would protect endangered species or aid endangered species in the spring system. And efforts were made to try to live up to that requirement, but none of them were successful. And we were reaching a point where the threat of federal intervention was growing and perhaps imminent. And at that point, the Texas legislature stepped in and put together a program, a program in which it mandated the participation of 21 of the biggest entities involved in water issues, from environmental groups to water purveyors. And it directed that it resolve the problem in 4.5 years, that the resolution that they came up with had to be acceptable to the Fish and Wildlife Service, which regulates the endangered species, and that the decision had to be reached by consensus. Ultimately, that group grew to 39 different interest groups, and after 4.5 years, they were able to reach consensus on how to deal with the aquifer, a consensus that hadn't been reached in the region in 50 years.
So is this a roadmap that others could follow to figure out ways to manage limited supplies of water?
Every situation is always unique. However, I think that it does indeed show how that if how you can structure things, how you can approach problems in a way that can help solve other water problems of a similar nature.
Seamus, in your book, and I really liked reading it because it was like sitting down and having a beer with a really informed, smart biker talking about water issues. So you're talking about finding common ground when it comes to climate change and stop worrying mm-hmm. about labels and finding evangelical Christians who believe in this and conservatives who believe in this and NRA guys who believe in this, and let's just figure something out.
I'm sorry, I missed the last part of your...
So everybody, just stop worrying about labels, stop worrying about Al Gore. Let's figure out how we're going to tackle the issue. The people who love outside know that something's going on.
There's a point in the book where I sit down, and I don't know if you read this part, but it's actually where the title of the book comes from, where I sit down and I talk to this farmer in Illinois, a guy who saw the drought, quite frankly, before even the scientists did, and bet his whole farm that he was right because of his understanding, his connection to the place, and his knowledge of the land being sufficient for him to turn around and maybe blend some of the old ways with some of the new ways and come up with a way of mitigating the impact of the drought. But it meant taking a big gamble, planting, for example, before he would have crop insurance. And I sit down with this guy. I sat down with him for 4.5 hours. And during the course of the conversation, me, a good old-fashioned dyed-in-the-wool liberal biker, yes, and him, a guy who had literally says, I never met a liberal before. And we sat down for 4.5 hours, and we talked about every hot-button issue in the culture. Every hot-button issue in the culture. We talked about climate. We talked about same-sex marriage. We talked about guns. We talked about all of these. Every one of these major issues. And about 85% of the time, we agreed. About 85% of the time, he and I shared absolutely basic feelings, basic values, basic beliefs, and basic ideas. About 10% of the time, we disagreed. But I could see where he was coming from, and he could sort of see where I was coming from. About 5% of the time, I thought he was an idiot, and he thought I was an idiot. The problem is, that 5% is all we ever talk about. And I make the argument in the book, not me, but the people I talk to make the argument in the book, stop letting those people who keep drumming on the 5% speak for us. I think if we do that, I think if we turn around and just talk to each other and stop letting people talk for us, we might do a little bit better.
And so what's that? How do we do that?
One of the ways is to stop demanding obedience to an ideology. Literally. I mean, you know, does that guy that I sat down with, does he believe in anthropogenic global climate change? No, he doesn't believe in it, or doesn't know if he believes in it. But what he does believe in is what he can see with his own eyes. And what he does believe in is the steps that he can take to turn around and reduce his fuel consumption, to maximize his crop and reduce his water consumption. What he does is he, you know, returning to some of the old ways, going back to no-till farming, things like that. These kinds of steps. So you know what? Listen to the guy. Encourage him. Begin to turn around and make those the area common ground that you start to explore, and maybe we'll start to get someplace. I don't need somebody to bow before the altar of what I believe. What I need to do is learn from what they know. And if I approach the conversation that way, if we all approach the conversation that way, what can I learn from this guy? You know, then we start to build consensus. And once you've got consensus, as Bob Inglis, the former South Carolina congressman, points out in the book, he says, Congress doesn't lead, it follows. So start to build the consensus from the grassroots, and you might get there.
Right, so that's what scares the politicians, is that you're gonna cut out the middlemen, and the people will figure out the solutions.
Well, fortunately, the politicians aren't smart enough to see us doing it yet.
All right, well, let me thank you very much. Seamus McGraw, he is the author of Betting the Farm on Drought, Stories from the Frontline of Climate Change. Also with us is Robert L. Gulley. He is the author of Heads Above Water, the Inside Story of the Edwards Aquifer Recovery and Implementation Program. Those of us who lived through this in the 1990s, it's like a trip down memory road of all the infighting and all the scary words that were used on talk radio. And they're going to be at the San Antonio Book Festival on Saturday at the Downtown Library. It's a free event. We'll have details on our website. This is The Source on KSTX.